Hello, and welcome to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. My name is Anise Bell, and I'm here with Shanae Forbes and Omar Collins. This month, we decided to focus on gender-based violence, as this issue has resurfaced in the Bahamian media recently after the unfortunate passing of Carissa Comer, the heated debate surrounding a 14-year-old falling pregnant for a 40-year-old bus driver, and the passing of Heavenly Tavares, who was murdered by her fiance. The most recent statistics released by the Royal Bahamas Police Force state that there were 8 domestic-related murders and 5 attempted murders in the past year. During this period, the Sexual Offenses Unit investigated a total of 179 cases, with 48 reports of rape, 6 reports of attempted rape, and 125 reports of unlawful sexual intercourse. The government, specifically Minister of Social Services, Lisa Ramming, in a statement she said, "We are going to pull together as it relates to halfway houses for women. Of course, we cannot expose where these places will be. And in the midst of that, we've already put together a task force that will be doing an intense training on domestic violence." Though there have been an influx recently of the issue of gender-based violence, it's not a new issue. So we wanted to dedicate today's episode to educate the signs of domestic violence, its impact, and the best response to not only stop, but also to prevent gender-based violence. So Shanae will start by listing some of the signs.
Okay, so according to the Bahamas Crisis Center, domestic and violence can include hitting, slapping, pushing, cursing, hurting, burning, threatening, denying freedom, and withholding money. And I'm sure it's not limited to just this list, but this is just a few examples of what it could look like. And these are a few questions that they post that you can ask yourself to say, hey, am I being domestically abused? Because some people may think that it's normal, or they may have grown up in an environment where it was considered okay and may not necessarily realize that, hey, this is wrong. This is something that I should get out of. This is a cycle that I should break. So the first question is, does your partner threaten to hurt you, kill you, your children, or your pets? Do they say it's your fault when he or she hits you and then promise it will not happen again, but it does? Do they put you down in public and keep you from contacting family and friends? Do they abuse you, such as throwing you down, push you, hit you, choke, kick, or slap you? Do they force you to have sex when you don't want to? Do they take your money or refuse to give you it? Do they ever threaten to commit suicide or intimidate you with guns, knives, weapons, and other weapons? And I think the threaten to commit suicide one is very interesting, because I think a lot of people don't realize that is a manipulation tactic. So I think that one is really important.
I agree. And definitely withholding money is something that actually happens a lot more frequently than people would like to say. I've been in contact with people who have been in relationships where the person, I don't want to say man, because I'm sure that it happens with women as well, where the more dominant, quote unquote, dominant partner would control the finances, but in a way that wasn't helpful. It was more like they would take all of the person's money and give them crumbs. And that in itself is a form of violence, or it's a form of controlling the situation, because it is also a mental tactic to break the other person.
Normally people are like, oh, well, why do people stay in abusive relationships, specifically women? Because normally what we see in the media, or that what people speak of, it's normally women. Some of the reasons people may stay in a abusive relationship, maybe because of fear, meaning that they're in fear for their life, in fear of leaving, or because they don't know what the world holds. For a lot of people, their relationship is all they know, and they don't know how to move on from that. Like Anise mentioned, with the financial dependence, they may not have a job, or the person may be taking their money, or they may not have support. Because if I'm in a relationship, for instance, and my husband provides everything for me, and I don't necessarily have family or friends to go to, then it's going to be difficult to leave because I have to now find a job, especially if they don't want me to get a job. I have to find some place to go, and it's difficult. The next one is isolation. So the person may be unaware of their legal rights, and like I said, only a lack of support by family and friends. They may have a physical illness, so and coping with the situation drains their energy. They may be emotional dependent on their partner because they're thinking of the so-called good times, and they try not to dwell on the beatings or the emotional or verbal abuse. Social pressures, they may feel like they're responsible for the failure of their relationship or marriage, and they may also be pressured by their parents, community, and the church, because you know religion plays a big part in marriages, obviously, because you go before a pastor most times to get married, and it's seen as a sign of God. And some people really think that if they get divorced from a person, that that's the end of their life, or that they really shouldn't. But I really don't think the law would want to be in a relationship with somebody who's hurting you. So if you want to leave, and if you feel like this is not what I should be doing, if that's what you want to do, just leave. Don't stay in a continuous cycle of abuse.
I think that we're always saying this, but always seek professional help from a psychiatrist, and they can tell you whether or not that person may have maybe a sociopath, or may actually be unable to really understand your emotions and change their behaviors, because understandably so, we are a Christian nation, and understandably so, a lot of marriages in the Bahamas are based in Christianity, and they believe that you should, some denominations of Christianity believe that you should not get a divorce, but definitely seek guidance, whether that be through a pastor, and also listen to your heart. If you feel broken down, if you don't feel happy anymore, if you feel like a different person, if you're being isolated from your friends, and that itself is a tactic, try your best to reach out. If you're told that you can't have friends, that's not healthy. At the end of the day, like, if you're speaking about a relationship, that person is supposed to be your friend. And if you feel afraid to tell your friends, hey, like, I don't like that you're doing this, or that you're feeling hurt by something, then maybe you shouldn't be friends with that person. So just how you may break up with a friend or something, you should break up from a relationship if it's definitely unfixable.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, if it shouldn't feel, your relationship shouldn't feel like a burden. And you shouldn't be afraid to talk to your partner. You shouldn't be afraid to talk to your partner because you're going to get abused, or you feel like, oh, this is going to be, I don't want to say argument, because that sounds weird. Like, it's going to be a fight, you should say, like a fight in terms of verbal abuse or beating.
And when somebody hits you, that's it. That's over.
And another reason that people stay is because of low self-esteem. They feel like, it's my fault that I'm being abused. I deserve this. So that's also a whole different layer. And like I mentioned earlier, like if a person grew up in a family that this happened in, or they witnessed this happen to somebody on a regular basis, they may feel like this is normal, and this means that my spouse loves me. And that's just a whole different can of worms. And then people also say, because this where I live, this my house, I don't have nowhere else to go, I have to stay and put up with this because this is what I signed myself up for, and I have nowhere else to go.
Understandably so. I understand, like, some, you can't just pitch up and go, you can't just get up and leave, especially if your finances are entangled, or you have kids together, or there's a lot of societal pressures or even family pressures. But sometimes you have to go through hell to reach a better place in life, even if that is a year that you're trying to figure it out, and you're going from place to place, or you're staying in a home after you've left a husband or a wife that has been physically or mentally abusing you. It's necessary in the long run, and it's helpful in the long run to move on.
From an attorney, Christina Galanis, noted that 100% of the women who claim to be victims of domestic violence do not follow through or decide to cancel a police investigation by dropping the case. So I think this is something that we've seen even with the Heavenly case, or it was a lady, I cannot remember her name.
Rosa Comer.
That's the lady who called the police and they didn't show up until the morning she died.
Oh, no, I think that was a different situation, but a lot of them sound the same. A lot of them start with several calls. But I've even heard, like, I wouldn't even completely place the blame on these women who are calling in and retracting their statements. I feel that once somebody comes and complains about domestic violence, I feel that it should still be followed through whether or not they recant their statement, because we know the nature of that issue. We know why they may be taking back their statement. So, with the Carissa Comer state one, I watched the video that she had posted. I'm not sure when she'd posted it, but it was before her death, obviously. And she spoke about how there was an instance where she went to the police, she told them what happened. And then she still went back to the person who was abusing her. But another, like several months later or so, she went back and she complained and they basically made fun of her or basically picked at her and said, but you went back. Abuse is a cycle. It's a never ending cycle and it's hard to get out of that. So I think that police need to be trained to be a little bit more empathetic in those situations and not victim blame, because victim blaming is just, it's a horrid thing to experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think the whole judicial system on the whole, because with Heavenly, I know she was a topic of discussion for quite a few months. Her fiance, friend Ron, I think is his name, who passed away, he was granted bail for, I think it was attempting to kill her or something of that sort, something really not good. And he was out on bail. I feel as though if he was kept in jail, she would have never died. And I feel like it just goes to show that women aren't necessarily protected in this country. And I know people like to say that, oh, we're downplaying it and stuff like that. But these are just the stories that we know about. Not everybody's story is publicized on the media. Not everybody's domestic violence stories are recorded. So it's just like, what about the ones that we don't know about? And I'm sure there's many. So it's just like, I feel like we have to take it more seriously. And like Anise said, like, we can't victim blame. Like, as tired as it may make you as a member of the public service to assist someone with these type of stories, just think about it as you may be saving someone's life, regardless of if they recant their stories or not, regardless if they call the police 10 times in the last 6 months for the same thing. It is your duty to protect these people, regardless of how you feel about the situation. So I think that delaying a response to someone because they always calling about domestic violence, like, you literally may be saving their life. So I think that it shouldn't be because in the Bahamas you have this cultural thing, oh, you be putting yourself in a position, that's your fault, that has nothing to do with me, but that's a oath that you that's what you signed up for as an officer, to protect the public. So I think it's not just on officers, and I'm sure that's not everyone, that's just a few cases that we know about, but I feel like we need to address that, and we need to address our laws, well, not laws, but how they're enforced as it pertains to domestic violence and sexual assault and stuff of that nature.
Yeah, and when a woman shares her story, or a battered spouse, male or female, shares their story, that's their first step to seeking help. You don't know how long they suffered. It could have been months, it could have been days, it could have been years. So it's important that you give them a safe space to feel like they're being heard and to feel comfortable enough to speak up. Because the way, like me personally, I've not experienced extreme domestic violence, but I would say that seeing Heavenly Tavares's case and seeing Carissa Comer's case, it's disheartening and it makes you feel like you shouldn't speak up. Like, because what is done for those people, you know? Omar, you had something to say?
Right, I agree, because in many, let me not say many, but some cases of domestic violence, it's kind of hard to say, don't go back to your partner or whoever's abusing you. And the victim blaming, it would cause the victim to feel like they shouldn't have opened up or they should have stayed to themselves instead of expressing their concerns and their worries about their life, because a lot of these cases are life-threatening and we should take them more seriously in terms of how the police would handle some of these cases. Like you all said earlier, if some of these things were taken more seriously, then some of these cases could have been different. The narrative could have been different and we could have seen a different outcome and how things are handled in society now.
And it definitely starts from young. It's important to teach like the new generations and the next generations and think about the fact that these people, younger kids, they're looking up to us and what's actually happening as young as they may seem. And it may not seem that they're listening, but I remember things from that. I remember domestic cases from I was young, from I was less than 12 years old. I remember seeing these things in the media and seeing these things in the news. So it's important to encourage a culture of acceptance so that people feel safe enough to speak up. It's important to talk about consent, to talk about your body autonomy, to talk about like you, who's in control of your body, you're in control of your body, to talk about accountability, to talk about to just be there to listen to them and to educate them on not just women's rights but their own rights.
I think it all starts in the home, like from we're growing kids up, I guess. We have to discuss these things with our children. We have to teach our sons and daughters not to put their hands on people, how to deal with their anger, and how to respect people's space and their privacy and all of these things. Because I feel like a lot of times in Korean culture, or even just Bahamian culture, that we kind of just let kids figure it out, like similar to what we were talking about in the sexual, in the marital rape and sexual assault episode, where we just let kids figure out sex by themselves and we don't talk to them about it because it's considered taboo. Like, we need to create a culture of talking to our children and educating them about these things so that, hey, I know that, okay, someone hitting up on me isn't normal, this isn't love, and to also be loving to our children so they understand that this is what love is supposed to be. So it goes so much deeper than just knowing the signs and identifying them as an adult, but it goes to our parents teaching us these things when we were young, or even at school, maybe in families, consumer science or classes like that, that can help us identify these hard things that happen in our society.
Also, I think we should speak to our children and even our, like, as adults, be willing to listen and learn, because you're never too old to learn and to learn something new. But we definitely need to understand the difference between yes and no. A lot of people like to say there's a blurred line, there's a gray area, but yes is yes and no is no. If you're confused, then it's no. And then I guess you should learn the signs of abuse, and not just for yourself, but for others. See, if you see something, don't be quiet about it. If you see someone being abused, don't be quiet about it. Even if you speak to them, don't ever make them feel like you're forcing them to be out of that situation. Though, yes, the situation is horrible, understandably so, and you want them to be out of that situation, it has to be their decision ultimately to get out of it. Just do your best to be there when they need you to be there. Even if they become the boy who cries wolf, just be there when they need you.
We just have to teach them to be a voice of change and to stand up for gender equality and breaking barriers, and also to get rid of these harmful stereotypes that we have specifically in our country, and not just against women but against men as well. Because gender-based violence isn't strictly for women. How many times have men been abused or have encountered or have endured sexual assault and they were afraid to report it because they don't want to be laughed at? Because the whole thing in our country is, oh, you're a man or you're a boy, you're supposed to like that. And I think that's also, it's a very, very hard thing as a young boy to deal with. And if you talk to at least a lot of guys that I'm talking to, they think that it's normal for a 14-year-old or 15, or think it's okay for a 14-year-old to have sex with someone who is 25, 27, 28. They think that's normal, but in reality, they're being taken advantage of because they're just little kids. And they think that they're doing something great because of how society has glamorized sex, and especially for young men. But that's not okay. And it shouldn't be glamorized at all. So that's also a barrier that we have to break down. So what are you guys' thoughts on?
Some people, men often think that they cannot be a part of breaking down the gender inequality and gender stereotypes, which you can help by speaking to your sons and to younger men that you know about being more open, and by breaking stereotypes, by you can challenge your expectations on what is a man and what is a woman. Be open. Don't, if someone goes out of the norm of what their quote unquote gender guidelines would be, don't make them feel lesser than for doing so. You know, be open and willing to talk to them. If it goes against your religion for them to be that way or to act a certain way, be open without being disrespectful. Because gender-based violence, it doesn't just stem from a hatred of women or a hatred of the opposite sex. It also stems from a hatred of your own sex and a hatred of the way you've been treated for your gender. So it's definitely important to call out harmful stereotypes and to start being open about your fears and your uncertainties and your disappointments, and to encourage personal expression. Actually, I think we talked about this in a personal conversation where we talked about like transgender rights. It also links to gender-based inequalities and how growing up you may be a certain way and people may judge you for that, and that affects you in the long run. So definitely just learn to be more open, and that helps to avoid any violence that may arise from that.
So how do you guys think that we could help prevent gender-based violence and continue to advocate for gender equality, especially in the Bahamas? And do you think we've gone far enough in terms of ensuring gender equality for men and women?
Okay, I feel like we could go about doing this by creating safe spaces for children from the home to the school system and beyond. Results from studies across 24 of 27 countries reveal that exposure to violence and trauma, whether in childhood or in the context of conflict, is linked to men's use of violence against their intimate partners. Because people are a product of their environment. So if you raise a child and they are accustomed to you seeing this type of behavior or this form of the actions you take or how you resolve issues, they're going to take that in, whether you believe it or not. And it'll inflict on how they go throughout life. You won't see it now, but as they get older and mature, they'll think that was normal. So they'll say, oh, well, my mother or my father would do this and do that, so I guess they was doing the right thing.
I definitely agree. The way you grow up does affect how you view relationships and how you treat others and your perspective on life and on your perspective on your relationship, your future relationship. If your parents are a certain way, and that even takes us right back to staying in a relationship that is abusive. If you see your parents are in an abusive relationship, you may start to rationalize the way or the habits of that household and carry it into your own household. So it's possible to break that cycle by seeking therapy, even if it's by yourself, so that you can become a better partner for your future spouse.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that we should be more supportive of sex education and challenge gender norms and relations and just allow people to be people and stop sticking a label on everything. Because many times, you get labeled as masculine for just being outspoken or just wanting to do things for yourself. And I kind of, that's kind of very, not kind of, it's very harmful, especially the young girls who are just trying to strive and make it for themselves. People try, especially older folks, like baby boomers, like so our grandparents, try to make us feel inadequate for being different. Yeah, so basically that needs to go. And we just need to embrace ourselves and who we are, and as parents, extended family, support your children, like support them, talk to them, and teach them about all the things under the sun that you possibly can, so they can be the best person that they can be, the most informed person that they can be. And yeah, just teach them to be better people and to be kind and caring and not take advantage of people. And yeah, just to be a good person overall, you know, and get rid of all these bad things, you know? And someone's all doing it again. I'm gone.
Yeah, and like we said before, violence is a learned behavior. Children who witness, according to the Bahamas Crisis Center, children who witness violence in the home often either become perpetrators or victims of violent crime in adulthood. Children who witness family violence tend to perform as well as their peers in school and sports, tend not to perform as well as their peers in school and sports. But some people are also high functioning. It's really up to you to be vigilant, like I had said before, and ensure that your friends and family members, or even the kid next door, that they have someone safe to speak to. Be that person for someone, just how someone else would be that person for you. Lend a hand, lend a favor, you know. A large percentage of young offenders charged with crimes against people have been exposed to domestic violence. So ending this cycle of domestic violence can potentially lessen crime and lessen these cases of rape and lessen just overall the societal damage and even reduce the amount of people jailed. Because I think that sometimes not everyone needs to go to jail. Some people really just need rehabilitation. Some people really need to speak to someone who helps them. Even if they go to jail and speak to a counselor and are open with their feelings, they will not be a repeat offender after they're released. And just be very vigilant of your children as well, because you may not feel that your relationship with your spouse may be abusive, but your children may be a bit more sensitive to certain things that you may say or do, certain words you may use against them or even to your partner. And that puts them at a bigger risk of having behavioral issues, and even be aware of the symptoms that your child may show, like sleeping problems, nightmares, stomach aches and headaches, bedwetting. Sometimes your children may be withdrawn or passive or even aggressive or bullying, but it's really up to you to understand like the type of person your child is and when they're being different.
Yes, I totally agree with what you're saying, niece. And it's even been proven that children who witness violence in their home have twice the rate of psychiatric disorders compared to children who come from non-violent homes. So that's also something to think about. If you're in a relationship and you have kids, if you're not thinking about yourself, think about the repercussions that this could have on your children. Children, like we said repeatedly through this episode, are a product of their environment. Whatever you show your children, most likely they're going to emulate. And you have to be very careful what you show them. You have to talk with them. And your whole purpose as a parent is to guide kids through life. So you want to be the best example that you could be for your child. So if you are in a situation that you feel that you need to get out, I urge you to seek help and reach out to the crisis center, reach out to a family member or a friend that's willing to take you in if you have one. But if you have nowhere to go, I suggest that you reach out to the crisis center at 242-328-0922 if you would like advice on leaving an abusive partner.
So even on their website, they had a section where they speak about the best way to leave a abusive relationship, because it's not as easy as just packing your stuff and walking out the door. You should definitely consider packing a bag, even taking piece by piece to somewhere that is safe. So even if you pack a small bag or carry a toy or carry your birth certificate or medication or a passport or cart documents piece by piece and hide them somewhere or hide them with someone, it'll be easier to move out without carrying a lump sum of anything, making it too obvious. So definitely consider that when trying to leave a situation, that it doesn't have to be a overnight thing. It can be it can occur over a month or several months.
To add to children being exposed to violence, it could harm them in emotional way, psychological, and even physical development. Children who are often exposed to violence are most likely to have difficulty in school. They'd abuse drugs or alcohol and act aggressively. They can go as far as suffering from depression or even like mental health problems. Or you can find them years later in their adulthood engaging in criminal activities. So it's really important to ensure that our children aren't exposed to this type of behavior. Let's break the cycle of the toxicity and be positive and teach them how to be better people and be positive about things.
So we're going to end by talking about the best way to break the cycle of abuse. First, you must think about protecting yourself and obviously your children. So it's like I said before, move things piece by piece. Don't ever just pick up and leave unless you have a very safe opportunity to do so. And even still, just take the essentials. You don't owe anyone anything. You don't owe that your abuser an explanation. You don't owe them a note. You don't owe them anything. The only person you owe is yourself. If it is necessary, call the police. If you're in immediate danger, make sure you contact the police. And if they're not there in time or they're unable to be of assistance, take it in upon yourself to leave, whether that be with nothing, just the clothes on your back, then do so. Your life is more important than material possessions. And avoid rationalizing. I know it's difficult, but sometimes we may think, oh, it was just one hit. Oh, they didn't really mean what they said. Oh, they were just upset. Definitely try to stick to your gut. I know it's difficult. It's hard. Find someone who is willing to listen to you and be aware that they may use gifts and words of affirmation and apologies, but their actions do not change. They continue to be the same person.
So overall, what we're just trying to say is, if you have the opportunity to leave and you want to leave, please do by all means necessary. And also just to be very wary of what you're showing your children. And I think the biggest takeaway is, from this whole conversation, is that we are responsible for ourselves and obviously our offspring. So try your best to break the cycle, to educate your kids, educate yourself, and just to seek help in any way necessary. Because at the end of the day, it's only going to be for the betterment of yourself and of your family to ensure that you're safe. That's the number one thing, to ensure that you are safe.
You can contact the Crisis Center at 242-328-0922. If you enjoyed this conversation, you'd like to listen back to our last episode on gender-based violence, you can follow us on Candid 242, and you can see our last episode on Facebook at Candid 242. We would love to hear your thoughts, so feel free to comment or message us or even tell us your stories. Contact the Crisis Center if you need help at 242-328-0922, and even contact a friend, and stay vigilant. Thanks for listening, and keep it real.